Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey, Mike, pop quiz. What is the standard go-to method for emergency decon?
That's pretty easy. Wet decon, right?
Well, you know, you're not the only one that may be thinking that, but it's actually dry decon.
No. How many times have I heard dilution is the solution to pollution?
Actually, too many. And that's the issue. Makes sense if you think about it. Without the use of water, we don't need to spend extra time setting up traditional showers or pools, and there's no wastewater afterwards. And you're not going to freeze anybody to death if it's below 60 degrees.
Check out firstlinetech.com/drydecon. Firstline Technology has a whole webpage dedicated to the methodology and links to plenty of dry decon resources. See for yourself why dry decon with FiberTech should be your go-to immediate decon solution.
You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Hazmat Guys, where we're going to continue to talk about batteries. No, we're not. We're going to continue radiation. We're sick of batteries.
It certainly feels like it. This is very true.
This is episode 2. I am here, as always, with Bob. Hey, Bob, what's going on?
Oh, nothing. We are continuing our march towards 100 minutes, the first 100 minutes of a nuclear release, detonation.
Yep.
Release is more accidental. Detonation is intentional.
Yeah, it is. You know what they describe it in this 100 minute document as a radiological release device, but it's clear from the way it's worded and that they're talking about a nuclear detonation, right? Because like a dirty bomb isn't really going to be sending stuff kilometers away.
Yes.
You know, and yeah, so but it's good if you are listening to this and you're going, what is the first 100 minutes? We answered that question back in last week's episode, which I believe was 364. Before we start to dive into some of the things that we wouldn't normally, that the average technician wouldn't have trained on or talked about specific to this document, is there any place that you're going to be over the course of the next couple of weeks?
I'll be in San Diego next week. And, also in the Hazmat Instructor Conference down in Fort Lauderdale on Monday, which if you're listening to this, it is the Monday that's coming up right afterwards. So, we were in Grahamsville, New York last night.
Yeah, excellent battery class put out.
Yeah. But it's just like... Every morning is like a couple of hours of just communications for these classes. So if you want your classes, be sure to contact us because it's going very well.
I had somebody be like, hey, can you do, you think next week you could come up? I was like, next week, man, we're booked out for like the next month and a half, like every week. What? I'm like, you got to get a hold of Bob. Get a hold of Bob and he'll put you on the schedule and we'll figure it out. But I'm like, yeah, I can't promise anything next week.
Yeah, so you know, the Hazmat Happy Hour is coming up again. That's every Thursday at 1900 hours Eastern Standard Time. thehazmatguys.com/happy, and you'll get in there for you specialists. Get to pick our brains and the mind trust, the brain cloud that is the ever growing happy hour. Really,
yes,
a lot of fun.
And I'm looking forward to this month's happy hour because I want to hear what happened with the regulatory issue that one of the guys was having. So we don't get into details. It's not recorded. Nothing that's ever said in the happy hour leaves the happy hour. But I'm looking forward to it. I want to hear what happened. I'm very excited.
Yeah. So a lot of things going on right now. So let's get into this.
All right. Well, the first 100 minutes, right? It describes exactly that. We went into pretty good detail as to what it was doing, but they have some things in the document, ways of acting. Now, the document doesn't turn around and teach you about radiation, right? You're not gonna read the document and be like, "Ooh, now I understand how to survey or anything like that." It's assuming that you already have mastered those skills. And so there's stages and steps that are involved that we kind of just thought that we would go over. And we didn't even fully finish all of the initial steps. So we're going to finish some of those initial steps, and then we're going to talk about some new terminology and kind of break down what they're referring to and how we address it. But we had left off with the various stages or the various missions. And one of the things that punches away from the first responder in this document and goes more to the command is going to be informing. And not that it totally takes away from the first responder. The first responder still has a duty to inform. But the document talks about informing the public, and it kind of talks about how to do that. So when the first responders are actually in the field, as far as first responders go, when they're actually in the field, they have to confirm that that they know that there's radiation, right? That's kind of like the first step. You get it, you confirm it, and now you have to pull the trigger. And when you do, you're going to start this huge cascade of events. And this is the part where we start to quote unquote inform all of the agencies around us that there's been a radiological event, and the public starts to become informed. And basically you're moving this information up your chain of command.
So you said a lot of people are going to get involved. There's apps out there that are specifically designed for this, you know, like Rad Responder and that kind of stuff, where you can download the app onto like an Android or an iPhone and practice, you know, doing these things. However, you have to be very careful using these things, because we were doing it once where we were playing around and we put in like 99 REM, which everybody should know is a awful lot. And immediately these apps transmit right to like Washington, D.C. And people are calling going, "What is going on in New York City? Like what just happened?" They're like, no, right. It was a training episode. You have to know how to use the app, because it could set off alarms in the wrong room that you don't want. Especially if you're practicing. So, you know, for larger like scale. Good.
I was gonna say, it's kind of like that Ask Rail app, right? Where they're like, "Yeah, no, go ahead, it tells you everything." And then you go and you look at it, and you got like agents knocking at your door, and they're like, "Why are you like looking at this train?" And you're like, "Well, I was told I could."
Yeah, so like, you know, for a large scale, or even a larger scale from like the command and control aspect, as far as like when the field units go and it comes become, we're now starting to set up like informing information, right? The best we could do with is send the information up the chain of command, right? We recognized it. Now the protection actions against the public and the additional request for help from, like, let's say, state resources, federal resources, those are going to be at the command and control level. But that means that those structures have to be in place prior to it happening. Like, you can't just, like, invent it from thin air.
Right.
Okay, so that's an important thing. That's why the NIMS system is so important, is that it's a rapidly expanding structure and de-escalating structure. So I don't mean that there's just going to be, like, a whole bunch of people sitting down at some, you know, EOC emergency operations center waiting for this to happen. But there has to be a formal understanding that a command and control center will be established. This is like your Office of Emergency Management and your chief of department and you're scratching your head and you say, I don't know what that means, but you got some serious work cut out for you if you're trying to implement these things before some kind of emergency situation. Now, I will say that this has been done before. So if you're saying to yourself, man, I would like to get ready for this thing. What if this happens? It's been done. And so steal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take somebody else's plan. Call people, because you would not believe how many agencies are going to come together in that sandbox, and agencies like New York City, agencies like I'm assuming Chicago, Boston, you know, Sydney are going to have these things already in place. So if you're a smaller place, it just might be cut and paste from that plan, and you got to figure it out.
Right. You want to do this ahead of time because you don't want to get cut out of the game. If larger agencies come in and you're totally unprepared, they're going to be like, listen, chief, thank you for coming. Door's right there. We'll let you know when you can reoccupy. And then you're totally, your assets, your everything is totally cut out. But all in all, the information portion of this whole 100 minutes is supposed to last between 5 and 10 minutes. So they figure by about the 10 minute mark, information should be going up the chain of command. Does that mean like the operations center has to be like fully functioning and ready to go and everybody's there? No, but the pin has been pulled and the grenade has been thrown, for lack of better, you know, words. The dirty bomb is set. So you can really see how, from a command point of view, this needs to be practiced. The tabletops, walkthroughs, who's responsible for what, everybody understands their position and their goals. And even if your job is just a phone call during a radiological event, who is that phone call supposed to go to, right? Like I call my chief. Who does my chief call? Who does my chief's chief call? Who does the commissioner call? Who does what, who's doing the phone calls to what? Because if you don't know who you're supposed to contact, it's going to take a hell of a lot more than 10 minutes to make this mark.
Yeah. And that brings us, from that 10 minute mark into what you would say is initiate. Right now, we're actually springing into action. We're actually going to do some stuff. We're going to take some predetermined things, predetermined waypoints, I think, and start acting. And so that's what's in this document, is that it's broken down to like life-saving rescue operations and securing and managing the scene. Now, from a field point of view, boots on the ground, this is where you're going to be the first responder making your biggest difference in the entire event, whether you're just there for life safety operations or you're there to secure and manage the scene. How we train ahead of time, and I will say we did do this an awful lot.
We did
practice this a lot, and it was if it's done right, it's not okay guys, we're gonna do the initiations section of the whole thing and deploy. It was, if you do it right, you can cleverly roll it into a multifaceted drill where they don't really know that they're doing it, and yet we're testing multiple aspects of it in one move.
Hey listeners, the Hazmat Guys have some great news for you and your organization. We are really stepping up our brand of in-person training in addition to the great content you get on demand. Now, we know what you're thinking, but this is already incredibly great stuff, and how could it possibly get better? All I can say is, wait until we're in front of you. When we gather the best of the best from across this planet and even beyond, and assemble an instructional cadre that is seriously second to none. And now we have a ton of ways to help you, your team, or your organization get to a level that makes everybody proud. From subscriptions, on-demand, hybrid methods, to full in-person goodness. You can contact me, Bob, at thehazmatguys.com to schedule a call and find a solution that works for you. And every participant of an in-person class gets a free one-year premium subscription, which sounds pretty good. So contact me at Bob at thehazmatguys.com and get some more information.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, on just a quick side note, you know, we're starting to get back into talking about drilling with this, and I am so disappointed and almost angered because I know what we're capable of. And they want to do this with like cards laid out on like the sidewalk. And I'm like, oh my God, I was so embarrassed when they said that. So that's a training point of view. That's a totally, totally different topic. I'm a total a-hole when it comes to not being trained correctly. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. No, what we're talking about isn't always from a fire department point of view, right? There's a lot of different agencies. Specifically, you're going to have like the police and the fire department interacting. So some of these things are going to be fire related. Some of them are going to be police related. And that's all the more reason to be planning this ahead of time, because you need to know what your functions are going to be, right? Because this is a multi-agency operation going into effect. And some of it seems pretty cut and dry, right? Like, we're first responders, we're firefighters, so we're going to be the life-saving operation. And for the most part, it's lands in the fire department, because the fire department has the training for it. It has the equipment for it. It has all the PPE for it. That's going to allow people to walk into a potentially airborne contamination of radiation, perform the functions that they need to do, perform the decons, the fire suppression and things like that. But there's still a tremendous amount of law enforcement aspect to this, where they're going to be looking for secondary hazards, secondary devices. They're going to be, from a criminal point of view, trying to take control of the scene and save whatever kind of evidence that they can. They're going to be forming initial boundaries. They're going to be determining the areas that the public can and can't go, the extent of the crime scene. They're going to start coordinating with other federal agencies and other law enforcement. So, again, everybody has a huge role to play, and everybody has to play nicely together. Otherwise, this information isn't going to be able to come across. If the fire department is taking readings and not relaying that to the law enforcement, then the law enforcement doesn't know how to properly secure the scene. So everything is kind of this give and take.
I seriously just spoke about this exact thing yesterday to a class, and I don't know if it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, we did a multi-agency drill with the New York City Police Department. And, you know, it was a shock to my system after all the years I've been doing this. You know, when you're getting dressed out for some type of insertion that requires specialized PPE, you know, we're taught in school that you're going to have a nice bench to sit on. You're going to have 3 or 4 people putting on your shoes. There's going to be palm fronds and iced drinks, and people are going to cater to your needs and everything. And it was like, get your shit on standing up. And we're like, what? Right? So now I'm like, I'm standing up and I'm putting my gear on, which, okay, listen, this is a little different, but I can figure this out. I consider myself moderately smart.
Right.
And then this NYPD guy comes up next to me and he's standing on my shoulder with a blue, because their fake guns are blue, a blue like rifle, long gun. And I'm like, can I help you with something? And he's like, your job is to fix that. My job is to protect you so you can go fix that. And I go, I didn't even think about that. Like, it threw me off. And I was like, holy crap, I didn't even think.
I've never had a rifle in my face while drilling.
Yeah, I was like, this adds a little bit of complexity to this. Like, he basically walked me to the scenario, and then he like escorted me as far as he could safely. And then when his asset came out, he again took me out to, like, it changed my understanding of things. So when Mike is saying that this is going to be a multi-agency thing, I'm saying it's going to be freaking multi-agency. We're estimating that within the 40-minute mark of the device going off, you should have this whole aspect squared away. Now, 10 minutes, we're doing the initiation, the information passing. 40 minutes, you should have life aspects squared away and the scene secured. That's a decent mark, and I think it's attainable. Again, good. There's variables.
The ball needs to be rolling.
Yeah, you got to be right? Hammering this one already.
We're not talking about mission complete at 40-minute mark. We're saying initiate.
Right, exactly. We're planning for this. So the next mission we're going to be doing is measuring and mapping of those radiation levels. Now, depending on how your resources and your AHJ, your authority, have jurisdiction, it's entirely possible that this is going to be a multi-agency event, meaning you're going to need more people than you possibly have. So you're going to be getting, you know, trained civilians, maybe, like the CERT teams. You might be getting federal assets. You might be getting mutual aid police departments and fire departments. You're talking about a lot of people working together to create a map for everybody to see. The document like suggests strike teams being formed, maybe a cop, a fireman, and a civilian stenographer or whatever. And these strike teams are going to work together to complete three major tactical goals. The first is characterizing the radiological contamination. So what it is, how strong it is it airborne, is it particularized, is there a potential for contamination? What kind of radiation is the primary source of decay?
Right. And we really want to sit when these teams are moving about, the ultimate overarching goal is to be mapping areas of really high radiation. And once we have all these different readings, we can actually take that information, whether it be in real time or it being, you know, kind of plotted into data points, and we can create a survey map of the radiological distributions within that scene. I mean, it allows all the other agencies to be able to plan all of their stuff because they know what the boundaries are. They know, they can understand how big things are. The mapping is important.
Yeah. And there is so like technology is being so good with this now. Like even the small point, like we were referencing, the cell phone with being, you know, the RAD responder, and there are other ones, but I think RAD responder is like the main one.
They actually just switched over to, they added biological and chemical warfare. Chemical? So now it's chem responder, or it's like chem event responder or something along those lines, but it is still the RAD responder program. Just, it is now enhanced for chemical warfare attacks.
Okay. Well, one of the things, and this is a small thing, is, well, I don't think it's actually a small thing. I think it's kind of a big thing. It's like, you know, more than likely it's me and Mike going into the thing. I have the meter. Mike has the phone. And so if Mike is doing his little primary search and he's 20, 30 feet away from me and I'm reading and I go, okay, the reading is 30. He types 30 in. The GPS in the phone is 30 feet off of that mark.
Yeah, you so got to be on top of each other.
You literally have to be like within feet of each other, or else your mark is, because 30 feet of distance, you know, the inverse square rule changes. You can shift the entire map.
Right, right.
Unintentional.
You know, you mentioned, I'd like to go back for a second. I know we're ending soon, but I want to go back for a second and talk about that drill, because that drill was a defining moment for us as FDNY training, where we realized that exactly what Bob said, oh my God, there isn't 16 people to cater to me getting dressed. And that was a eureka moment where we realized that for decon as well. And it was kind of like, wow, we haven't been training the way that we're going to be actually reacting. And from that drill forward, we changed the way, maybe not initially, like when we first start to get into gear, when we're first training people, like we're doing that, you know, like you said, right? You got like six people at tip, but once we get past that initial, this is how you get dressed, everything that is done now within our department is done with the same assets that you would have on scene, meaning your two hands.
Yeah.
And that's it. Nobody helps you.
Even in that drill, like when we were going to decon, there was a conga line of people waiting to go to decon. You got people at, you know, 4,000 PSI, 3,000 PSI, 1,000 PSI, guys with the vibro alerts going off on the SCBA. So it's like, okay, now we have to really, we talk about this, triaging those guys, but what actually turned out to be faster was just create more corridors.
Mm-hmm.
Like put more checkout stations in the supermarket and you could process more people. And so we started having just more. And then it got to the point where guys are just like, I'll get out myself. And
right.
It actually worked. Like,
yes.
Like we train you for an emergency like that. Is this everything's an emergency. Like if we're doing this, it's an emergency. So yeah, there's no regular emergencies.
Yeah, we realize that we don't have the resources. Even the New York City Fire Department won't have the resources to be able to don and doff equipment as we train. And I understand why we train that way, right? Because there's a safety aspect. We don't need a guy getting hurt. So there's a guy helping him with his SCBA. There's a guy helping him with his boots. There's a guy helping him, you know, oh, I sat down. I already put my boots on. I forgot my radio. Like, okay, here's, you know, like, but we need to, there is a portion of training that, and that everybody, whether you're hazmat, firefighter, police, like you need to be evaluating what you're doing in training and say, is this how I'm doing it in real life? Because I promise you from seeing some awful decon training and then seeing that awful decon training happen in real life, you do actually do as you train.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So the information that's gathered by these teams gets really into the bird's eye picture to the extent of the contamination, safe boundaries, hot zones, hot spots, because there's a difference between a hot zone and a hot spot, right? Those are chunks of the piece that could be on the roof or on a moving bus that could be anywhere, and creating future plans on how you're going to be dealing with that radiation.
Yeah, embedded in some guy, Joe, running down the street screaming.
Yeah. See you next week, guys. We'll finish it up next week.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.